has been studying the minutes again.
I would move the minutes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lewick moves the minutes. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Ayes have it. We're just going to wait a moment for technical difficulties. Not waiting for the technical difficulties, but are we good? Members and members of the audience and folks watching at home, today we don't have any bills, but we have a number of testifiers. The purpose for the meeting today is to get a handle on Emerald Ash Borer and its impacts on waste disposal, wood waste in particular, and energy. So we're going to have a number of cross-referencing topics that some of which we don't normally hear in this committee, but I think with Emerald Ash Borer we have heard pieces of the issue, and my goal here was to try to get a variety of pieces together with Emerald Ash Borer so we can actually get a handle on some of the environmental consequences and issues beyond the pieces that we've been talking about in the past. So with that, we will start out with Amy K. Kerber with the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair, members. My name is Amy K. Kerber. Are you able to hear me?
No.
Really. Speak close to the microphone.
Even closer. Is that better?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. All right. My name is Amy K. Kerber with the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, Division of Forestry. I work in legislative and outreach for the division. So the DNR has been asked to come today and just share the progress or status of the combined $1 million of funding that was provided as grants to communities to support or combat Emerald Ash Borer. I'm just going to take a couple of minutes to remind you of EAB, where we're at, and then Gary Michael, co-worker who's overseeing this project, will give you details, specifics. So as you all probably remember, we have a lot of ash in Minnesota. We have 1 billion ash trees in this state. We are the state that has the largest number of ash of all states in the country, lucky us. And these trees exist in our communities, they exist in our yards, and they exist in the forests of our state. As we look into our communities, 1 in 5 trees within our communities is actually an ash tree. The map that's showing, just to give you a sense of what are all those dots and colors, the dots, the size of the dot represents the percentage of ash in a community forest. So the largest red dots, as you look at this, are those that are 40 to 60% ash in the community forest. The shaded area on that map represents the concentration of ash in our greater ash forests, or the black ash swamps, the mixed forests in north central and northern Minnesota. And as that color becomes more tan, it's a higher concentration of ash in those areas of the forest. Give you a visual of where we have ash in the state. So ash, all ash trees are susceptible to Emerald Ash Borer. Emerald Ash Borer kills almost every tree in a stand once the stand becomes infested or a community forest becomes infested. And it can kill small trees down to 1 inch in diameter as well. So we have EAB found in 21 counties in the state. So there are quarantines in those 21 counties. For those of you that have been keeping up with the EAB news, you probably noticed this late summer, early fall, Stearns, Brown, and Nobles counties were the most recent counties added to the quarantine list. Looking at this map, the quarantine is in the pink, and then the green area is the area that is considered generally infested within the quarantine counties. So last year we were here and spoke with you about the need, what we hear from communities. What do they need to be successful in combating Emerald Ash Borer? and we shared the need for communities to act now because they want to spread the costs of dealing with our mold ash borer out over a timeline that is acceptable to both local and state budgets, and they need financial and technical resources to help with inventorying where are the ash, making management plans to deal with ash, how to treat, remove, replace with diverse species of trees in their forests. They need to continue to do education for residents and assistance for homeowners. Communities need to preserve the ecosystem benefits as long as they can. They want to have those trees alive for a variety of reasons, while at the same time replanting for the future. And the longer we're holding emerald ash borer in the areas where it currently is means more time for communities and forest managers to be preparing and planning and being ahead of emerald ash borer to mitigate that effect so that we're not having a big significant impact all at one time. So to keep in mind the scale of this, it's about 1 million acres of ash forest in the state in addition to our communities. So I'm going to hand it over to Gary Michael to talk specifics about the grant and where we're at.
Mr. Michael.
Yes. Board and members, or chair and members, my name is Gary Michael, as Amy Kay has said, and I'm the Cooperative Forest Management Supervisor for the Division of Forestry at the DNR. And so what that means, because nowadays you got to spell out what your title really means, is I work with urban and community forestry and then private landowners on their forests. And I always tell people that I feel like I had the best job in the DNR at the Division of Forestry because we can manage our state forests perfectly and not meet the needs of the resources and the citizens of Minnesota. And that's, you know, timber, whether it's timber, wildlife, habitat, recreation, clean air, clean water. We got to look at the private lands and also the urban and community forestries and the resources there. So, but today I'm here to talk about the grants and the money that we did get from the legislature on July 1st. So, I think it's up there. Yep. So, if you look at the slide there, we actually got two different funding sources. One of them was from the general fund for $700,000, and the other one was LCMR for $300,000. And it's important to realize what we're able to do with these funds and what we aren't based on the appropriation language. So it's listed there. The $700,000, we were able to do some tree inventory, management plan development, tree and stump removal, and then tree replacement. And that's with the general fund. For the LCCMR funds, we only could do tree planting. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about what we've done since July 1st and until today to get these projects moving in the communities. So it took us a little time once we got the money on July 1st to get, you know, the whole process going, the application, the pre-applications, which I'll talk about, the RFP, and so on. So we got the pre-applications and the RFP out on September 30th. Of 2019, and we gave the communities a few weeks to do that. And the pre-application was like a two-paragraph, one-pager, just description and how much money they're looking at. And the reason we did this, and I think this is important, was to kind of figure out what the need is out there. You know, instead of just getting the application, we wanted more people to at least give us a pre-application and not have to fill out these long, you know. Exactly what you're going to do and the budget and where you're going to plant, where you're going to remove, and so on, which is the real application afterwards. So so that's what we did, and I'll talk a little bit of the results on that. So we got those back October 4th. We whittled those down based on some factors and sent them back out to communities we still wanted to hear the full application from. So then that was due on November 15th, 2019. And we got those back, and we made selections based off of those. Now, we put together a grant review committee of about 14 people, including DNR and some partners, and they looked at project timeline, project budget, need identification, impacts on priority populations, plan project communications, and then the key personnel to be able to do the project. graded them out, and we were able to, you can go on to the next slide, award the funds. So this kind of gives you some details. This first one is the $700,000 of general fund. We had 50 pre-applications for $700,000, and the total that we was requested was $3,374,000 odd. So, and the maximum that they could apply for was $100,000. So just keep that in mind. We were able to award 13 communities with grant funds ranging from $4,500 to $100,000. And they matched the funds with another $600,000. These communities are putting money into this too, obviously. And then on the right there, you'll see the communities that were awarded general fund dollars. And I'll have a map, and you should have a handout too of where those are. And then the estimated outcomes for this work for the $700,000 are 1,027 trees removed and about 1,300 trees planted. Now, there's more trees planted than removed because communities are already removing trees, and they're utilizing this fund to replace those where they weren't able to before. So that's great. We also have five new inventories with this funding and four new EAB management plans in these communities. The next grant was the $300,000 from LCCMR. We had 25 submissions there, totaling about $625,000. The maximum here was $30,000 for this grant, okay? We were able to fund 12 communities with these funds, and they're listed there too. And again, I have a map coming up. And they matched those funds with $183,000. The estimated outcomes for that based on the applications and what they said they're gonna do, because they haven't done it yet, obviously, is just over 2,000 trees planted. So very good. Okay, now here's that map I was referring to earlier, and you should have that as a handout. And it kind of gives you an idea of where we're able to fund projects, and they're color-coded by the funding structure. Something to note is in the background there, the quarantine counties are highlighted in a red. So, and that shows you in relation to where the bug already is and where we're able to fund some projects. And if you go to my last slide here, these are our lessons learned, and then I'll get out of your way and let other people talk. But I thought this was important to mention. As you go through this process, you learn things from the communities. And some of the things I think are important that we learned was more outreach is needed to these communities to educate them, especially on the ones that where the bug isn't there already. So we kind of get this feeling, and we didn't get a lot of response from communities where the bug's not there, so they're thinking, well, it's, you know, I'll worry about that later. But we wanted these and future grants to be able to get to the communities before the bug does, so that they can slow the spread and be prepared and spread out the cost of this thing. Because you don't want 5,000 trees dying, you know, like that in your community, and they start falling over. You got to prepare for that. So we need to do, DNR and others need to do more outreach to the communities. We also learned that smaller communities need help understanding the resources that are available to them. So what I mean by that is, you know, they're not applying for grants. In smaller communities, I'm talking about probably like 5,000, a population of 5,000 or less. And we're running out of time. And what you got there is you got one guy or gal that, you know, plows the streets, mows the lawns or the parks, and they're also expected to put in the grant applications and manage them and implement them. Well, they're overwhelmed. So we need to get to those and tell them there's help out there. We have DNR foresters that can help them with the application process. There's arborists and so on that can help them implement. And then where are the vendors that can take down the trees and grind the stumps? So we can help with that. And two more things. More assistance is needed in general, and I think you'll hear that today, and you probably heard it before, but $1 million is great, and we sure appreciate it, but more is needed out there, and we can identify numbers if you'd like. And communities need more time to do the work, and here's my one particular ask of this committee, and probably maybe it needs others, but The appropriation we got from the general fund, the $700,000, it expires on June 30th of this year. And we're just now getting the contracts set. And we got people doing inventories, our community's doing inventories, management plans, taking down trees and putting up trees, and they're not going to, and planting trees, they're not going to get that done by June 30th. So we're hoping to get that appropriation language changed to maybe June 30th, 2022. So, and that's really all I have for you. Hope that helps.
And we do have that bill drafted, and Representative Lee has it and would be interested in having co-authors. He has not dropped it in the hopper yet.
Thank you.
We have, thank you. Representative Eklund and then Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Kerber and Mr. Michael, for the presentation. I've got a lot of concerns about Emerald Ash Borer. If you look at my counties in my district, there's significant parts, significant ash forest, but more critical right now as I look at these projects that were awarded, and we've got a policy in place for not moving firewood, but how are we disposing of these ash trees in say Moorhead or Manoman or Bemidji? Because I know, having worked in the forest products industry, that the ideal way to ideal mileage for trucking timber is 75 miles and in. And so I applaud these communities that are going after this issue, but we can't transport it. So what is the plan for disposing of these trees?
Okay, Representative Eklund, members. So I know that each community as a part of this has to follow waste disposal guidelines. So that's happening. Wood or ashwood can be chipped down to a certain size and transported. And I think that might be addressing what you're asking. If you would like, on specific communities, we can get their actual disposal plan or what they're doing with the wood and report that back to you. I don't have the specifics on Moorhead to be able to answer exactly what they're doing.
And Representative Eklund, we're going to hear from a number of speakers right on that point.
Right. Yep.
So I think I think they all heard the question, so we'll.
Thank you.
Okay.
If you can get that information, I'd appreciate
it. On Moorhead, sure. Yep.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If more speakers are coming, that probably, because my questions were along that same line, as far as if you can't move the ash anyway, what are the quarantine areas doing? And you got quarantined areas here where there apparently is no emerald ash borer. And if you can't move it across the state, which I believe is the case, what are the quarantined areas?
Representative Green
and
Chair, I think it may be better to answer a quarantine question coming from the Department of Agriculture, if you would permit him to step forward and answer that question. Or do you want to wait?
I can wait.
I think we're going to hear.
Okay. All right. It's a valid question, and I just would rather address it specifically. So, okay.
Great. Any other questions for DNR? Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this might be another thing that future testifiers, I see we've got Brooklyn Park and someone from the county, but just interesting in, you know, what would have happened had you not had these funds. You know, I expect some of those trees would have had to come down anyway. I know one of my cities got some of the LCCMR dollars in Roseville, and, you know, that impacts city budgets too. So just kind of want to make that point. And, you know, I don't know if you have anything specific to weigh in on that, but I expect the cities and counties that are on the list will have something to say about that as well.
Representative McGee, yes.
Just a quick question on transport. I would not expect to see emerald ash borer way up here in Stearns County or Todd County, whichever it is. But it does appear to me that that's right along, there's like a string along 94. Am I making a correct observation there?
Ms. Kerber?
Representative Bouguinius, Chair, members, if I understand, I just want to make sure I'm understanding your question correctly. Are you looking at the map of communities funded or the quarantine?
Representative Bouguinius.
The quarantine.
You're looking at the quarantine. Thank you. Looking at the quarantine. So, correct. I mean, as you're looking at it, yes, does that parallel? And what we do know is emerald ash borer does not fly very far on its own, right? It stays within a very short distance of where it's born, so to speak. And humans are the biggest mover, the biggest vector for moving emerald ash borer in firewood and other wood products.
Thank you. Representative McGinnis.
You would not expect to see, I think it would be important to overlay your map with the quarantine areas with a highway map, so we would get an idea of maybe what's really happening up there.
Great. Thank you. I think we want to keep moving, and so we don't run onto a log jam, I guess, at the end.
Trying.
Mr. Ruiz, City of Brooklyn Park, and Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Craig Johnson with the League of Minnesota Cities. Just going to make a couple brief introductory remarks and turn it over to the person who's dealing with this issue so you can get some direct information. So my name is Craig Johnson. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. And as many of you know, we've been actively working on this on behalf of our members, starting when the first discoveries were made in southeast Minnesota, and even a little earlier than that when we saw them right across the river in Wisconsin and knew they were coming. We are very appreciative of the legislature's actions last year and of Representative Hansen's leadership in getting some initial funding and grant programs set up to start getting some assistance out to cities on this. That's been very few and far between over the course of this 10 years that this has been being fought in the state. So we very much appreciate that and look forward to working with the legislature to get that to be an ongoing and more usefully sized funding package that can get the work done. I guess the point I would just like to make is if you have been sitting watching this as legislators and wondering when is this going to impact my district, it's time. If it's not in your district yet, it's in 21 counties in the state, and it's coming. And it's going to continue to spread a little bit faster as it has more places it can spread from. So if you want communities in your area to be ready, we need to start getting the resources out to them as quickly as we can, because you don't want to be playing catch up with this. Right now, cities in this state are either already dealing with emerald ash borer and are busy trying to figure out how they're going to take these trees down, what they're going to do with the waste wood, what they're allowed to do with the waste wood. To the earlier question, I don't know what any specific city is doing that can't transport because of quarantine, but in all likelihood, they're either having to stockpile it or have a fire regularly to get rid of the waste wood, because that's what your options are unless you can have access to the chipping material that gets it small enough so it's shippable. And if your community isn't in that situation, they're busy either planning for it because it's in a neighboring community already and they know it's coming soon and they're trying to figure out what their situation is, or they're sitting there not knowing what to do next because they don't have any funds, they don't have any staff, and they know that it's going to be a significant problem when it hits their community. So very much appreciate the community taking the time to look at this. Dan Ruiz from the City of Brooklyn Park is here to go over a specific case and one of the projects that was funded under this grant cycle, and hopefully that will give you some specific information. Happy to be around for questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Ruiz, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Again, my name is Dan Ruiz. I'm the Public Works Director for the City of Brooklyn Park, and thanks for the introduction, Craig. Again, thanks for the privilege to speak to the committee today. I'm not only representing the City of Brooklyn Park, but really all the cities in Minnesota who face this great challenge from EAB. As most of you would recall, EAB was first found in St. Paul in 2009. For our city, we put together an EAB management plan in 2011, knowing that it was just a matter of time. Fortunately, it was a little slower getting to our community than some of the others, but it was found in Brooklyn Park in August of 2017. Since then, we have taken an aggressive treatment approach of our public trees. We have about 5,000 public ash trees. And in 2019, it was the first year that we treated half of those trees, and we're going to treat the other half next year, again, to try to extend the life of the trees while Then, in the meantime, we look for grants such as the committee has provided through the DNR partnership and tree trust partnerships to move forward and replant. So again, I want to take a moment to thank the legislature, this committee, and the DNR for the Preparing for EAB and Community Forest Grant Program. That's the one that we were a recipient of. We were very fortunate. We received $100,000 as part of that grant, and we're using that specifically for removal of ash trees and replanting of ash trees. One might wonder, how many trees could you remove and replace with $100,000? A lot less than you think. It's about 100 trees. The average cost of, say, an 18-inch diameter tree to remove it is about $700. To replant it is about $300. It's expensive. If you've ever had a tree removed, $700 isn't even that bad to get a tree removed sometimes by a contractor, depending on the size. As I mentioned, Brooklyn Park has nearly 5,000 ash trees, so to replace and remove all of them would cost over $5 million, and we're one community. We are a large community, sixth largest city in the state, about 82,000 people, but it's overwhelming. But as they say, you know, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. How do we eradicate EAB? One tree at a time. And again, these are only the public trees. Private trees need to be addressed as well. As the DNR had stated, many cities have the highest percentage of trees being ash trees. It's a blessing and a curse because they're fast-growing trees and provide great shade and whatnot. In Brooklyn Park, it's similar. About 25% of our trees are ash trees. And, you know, just imagine losing a fourth of the trees in your city or in your yard. I mean, it is pretty devastating. Compounding this in Brooklyn Park is that even a higher percentage of our ash trees are in many lower-income neighborhoods. And so one thing that we're doing to address that is we've partnered with a contractor, and other cities have, such as Roseville, like I said, Brooklyn Park, Maple Grove, a few to name, partnering with a contractor to offer discounted ash treatments. The discounts are upwards of about 40% of the cost of an ash treatment. For instance, I've got an ash tree that cost me $150 to treat, and had I been able to tap into that program in the city I live in, it would have been about, you know, $90 or $100 to treat instead. So again, it's important to try to give people the opportunity and the incentive to be a partner in addressing the EAB challenge. Again, we can't predict how fast EAB is going to continue to spread, but we know that the best management plans include a combination of removals, replanting, and treatment. Again, I really appreciate the time that I was given here today, and the city appreciates the funding that you provided, and we certainly look forward to more opportunities to partner with the state and the DNR to address the EAB challenge. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions the committee may have.
Representative Wagenius.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. You talk about treatment. What are you using to treat the trees?
Mr. Ruiz.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, we're doing a direct chemical injection into the tree. And, you know, based on best practices right now, you know, you need to treat the tree at least once every other year. We're going to monitor that closely to see if we might even be able to extend the treatments to be once every 3 years. But our initial treatments are direct injections, yes.
Representative Wagenius.
So you're using a systemic treatment then? I assume a neonicotinoid?
Mr. Ruiz.
Yes, that's correct.
Have you looked at the implications for the rest of the stuff that grows in terms of your bee populations being and your butterfly populations?
Mr. Ruiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, at this moment, our initial goal is to treat all of the public trees. One full swoop to wipe out the population or lower the population as much as possible. We will look at other studies that may implicate other, shall we say, collateral damage to things, but I'm not aware of any major damage to other things yet. But I would take this that, you know, it's a pilot project that we're doing by treating all of our public trees. All I know is I've seen a lot of pictures from Michigan, and I've vacationed there, and the devastation there is unbelievable. And their management plan is they just are cutting up their trees and putting them out for a donation, $4 per bundle, and whether people pay or not, that's kind of how they're taking care of their trees. And we're just trying to take a more proactive approach to keep the canopy as long as we possibly can and see what else science and nature come up with as we move forward.
Representative Wagenius.
If I could follow up, there is science at the University of Minnesota. You want to look into Dr. Vera. Now, can you pronounce her last name for me, somebody?
Krushek.
Yes, thank you.
We will, thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you. Karen Zumach, Minnesota Shade Tree Advisory Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Karen Zumach. I am the current president of the Minnesota Shade Tree Advisory Committee and the director of community forestry for the nonprofit Tree Trust based here in the Twin Cities. MNSTAC is a 400-member organization that's composed of public and private sector tree care professionals, interested citizens, nonprofit organizations from across the state. We are tasked with educating and informing all Minnesotans about the benefits of a healthy community forest.
And just so the audience knows, it's apparently not just our committee, but all the committees are having some audiovisual difficulties. So if you'll just be patient with us, it'll eventually work, hopefully. Proceed.
15%. Okay. And so our role is actually to act as the state's tree board. So when we talk about our urban and community forests, we're talking about the trees in our communities that line our streets and our parks, essentially trees that get mowed around is what we like to say. EAB is a big deal. It's considered the most destructive forest pest ever in North America, leaving a path of hundreds of millions of dead ash trees in its wake since first arriving in Detroit in 2002. As the DNR indicated, Minnesota is home to one of the largest population of ash trees anywhere in the nation. So loosely translated, we here in Minnesota have a lot to lose. In our northern forest, the black ash component, which exists in our state, is unlike anywhere else in the nation, making up a large percentage of the 1 billion ash trees. This forested land is an ecological and environmental treasure for our tribal communities, the quality of our lakes and rivers, as well as the wildlife that call this part of the state their home. The threat EAB causes to our quality of life, environmental, economic, and health to our state is far-reaching, leaving few issues of concern across the state untouched by impact. Last year marked 10 years since EAB was confirmed in our state. It was discovered in St. Paul a decade ago and has now spread to 21 communities. It is indeed a predictable disaster. Ash trees make anywhere from 20 to 40% of the canopy in our communities. In some cities, it's up to 60%. The DNR estimates that there are 3 million ash trees in our urban and community forests across the state. If you look at the slide up on the screen, that is what's called the EAB death curve. When EAB is first found, the clock starts ticking and trees start dying slowly. When you get into year 10 is when you start to see that exponential increase in mortality. That's where we are. When you drive around St. Paul, when you see those trees with those green rings around them, more than likely they're dead or very, very far gone on the infestation. So we talk about a predictable disaster. We know that the tornado in North Minneapolis that happened in 2011 took out 1,400 acres of canopy in one afternoon. If we could have prevented that, I would imagine that most of those residents in that community would have tried to do anything they could to keep those trees and the other assets they lost that day. We know this is what will happen. This is not new. Toledo, Ohio had no idea when emerald ash borer was found. What to do with it. They lost every single ash tree. But we know how to manage it differently here. For the past 5 years, my colleagues and I have been working hard to bring awareness to this issue. We've been here at the legislature trying to make the case for funding for communities, and thankfully last year we were successful. We contend there's no reason that Minnesota should deal with EAB the same way those states before us have. There are tools in the toolbox that can help manage this pest, transition away in an orderly way, and preserve those trees and their environmental benefits. This is Minnesota, after all. So last year, as I said, marked a turning point for our efforts. The funding provided by this body and supported by the Senate was the first step in helping communities manage this pest. It should be noted that the first appropriation for Dutch elm disease, another devastating pest that happened in 1975, was $1 million. The second biennium in 1977, they awarded $28 million to manage this, to manage Dutch elm disease. There's a precedent here at the legislature for to help communities manage their trees. So that money's a start.
Ms. DeMont, how much would that convert into in today's dollars?
In my current knowledge, do not have that answer, Mr. Chair. However, we have done some calculations with the funding that was appropriated during that time for Dutch elm disease and have estimated it to be in today's dollars of about $500 million.
Proceed.
And there are still amazing elm trees here in St. Paul. What we're trying to say is that it's imperative that we provide this comprehensive access to encourage utilization of all the tools in the management toolbox, like Mr. Ruiz had indicated, that technical support is important, not just for the communities here that are already managing it, but those ones that have yet to really become infested. Inventory, planning, preservation of these high-value ash trees using a non-neonicotinoid insecticide deemed as low risk and injected purely into the tree, those removal of low quality ash trees, and of course replanting the next generation of diverse species of trees. We know that comprehensive management reduces these beetle populations, reduces the overall costs for communities, and preserves those vital ecosystem services provided by mature trees. A robust statewide program to provide access to these important tools will provide an orderly transition away from this over-reliance on ash in our communities. So I have this ash tree up on the screen here, and I just want you to think about that ash tree for a minute. Take a look at it. That's an average-size ash tree. It's about 40 feet tall and is about 18 inches in diameter. That's the average size of any one of those 3 million ash trees in our state. That single tree is providing benefits to the homeowner whose home it's in front of, to the city where it is, and to the county, to the state, by mitigating stormwater runoff, conserving energy with its shade, sequestering and avoiding carbon, reducing urban heat island, and increasing property values. And guess what? It's doing all of that just standing there. It's one of those few pieces of infrastructure in our cities that actually increase in value over time. In short, those big trees are providing big benefit. The U.S. Forest Service put together a sweet tool a couple of years ago that actually can quantify those benefits in dollars. So for each 18-inch ash tree, remember there are about 3 million, there is nearly 2,000 gallons of stormwater that are mitigated every year at a savings of $52 a tree. An increase in property value of $44, a reduction of nearly 1,000 pounds of CO2. So when we're talking about these climate action goals, these trees are making a big impact. With these additional benefits to energy conservation and air quality, the total value of these benefits from just that one tree is $165 per year. Multiply that by 3 million and you can see how those benefits really add up. Then to think about what we lose when we lose those trees. We're talking about an additional 6 billion gallons of stormwater going into our already stressed infrastructure, impacts to our air and water quality, our greenhouse gas goals, reduction in property values, and thus property revenues, further exacerbating the strain on budgets caused by increased management costs. The city of St. Paul alone thus far has spent nearly $12 million on managing emerald ash borer. And there's still a lot of dead trees to deal with. The other important thing to note is that it takes two generations to restore the tree canopy in a community after an invasive species to its pre-invasion levels. So when you think about those ecosystem services that those big trees are providing, we're talking about decades of time before we get those benefits back. So the plan forward as we propose is really looking at this as a way to provide this assistance in an aggressive way to, in a form of matching grants for cities and towns to allow access to all the tools necessary to mitigate the effects of EAB. The Environmental Quality Board is putting together an EAB management protocol that is looking at a report that's basically suggesting $8.5 million a year. We support that number. We also think that it would be appropriate to be considering investing in our urban and community forests into the future with sustained funding of $2 million per year to build up the resilience within our urban and community forests. We ask that we continue to support the research that's being conducted in the northern black ash swamps through the DNR, the University of Minnesota, the Minnesota Forest Resource Council, as well as within the tribal communities. Support research efforts in those black ash stands and incentivize wood utilization. There's a lot of wood to be used, and there's a lot of carbon in that wood. It's important that we find a way to incentivize that activity, just like we did with Dutch elm disease with our sound barriers. But one thing is clear, we need to manage this pest where it is so we can allow it, the science and the research to catch up. It's come very far since 2002, and we can manage it better. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You're asking for money for access to all the tools necessary, and I think I heard you say one of the tools was treatment. Tell us about what you recommend for treatment.
Ms. Wagenius, the pesticide that is currently being used for treatment for emerald ash borer is called emamectin benzoate. It's injected into the tree. It is indeed a systemic, but it is not labeled as a neonicotinoid. So using that as a way to preserve the best trees, not every tree in the community, preserving those best trees, keeping those benefits around, and letting those communities replant and transition away from ash.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, if something is a systemic and not a neonicotinoid, fipronil is a systemic and not a neonicotinoid, and it's extraordinarily toxic. So have you tested what you are recommending when it goes up into the trees and gets into however it flowers? Have you tested that for its toxicity to bees and butterflies and moths and all?
Ms. Dumont.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, I am not at all an expert in that field. There are a couple of folks here in the audience today who may be able to answer or respond to those questions, or we can certainly seek out that information for you.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question. How many years have you been treating the trees?
Ms. Zuma.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Green, I personally have not been treating any trees, but communities have been treating since 2010 on an every other year basis.
Representative Green.
And I'm going to assume you're not a pollinator expert. Is that correct?
Ms. Zumach.
Mr. Chair, Representative Green, I am not a pollinator expert. I am a tree expert, and I recognize that there are challenges in regards to pollinators, and I do know that emamectin benzoate has been deemed one of the lower risk pesticides in that term.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is just a comment. The reason I brought it up is because I believe that we started seeing a decline in pollinators in 2006, and that's why I asked how long you've been treating the trees.
Any other questions for Ms. Zumach? Thank you.
Thank you.
Ken Smith, District Energy. And if there is someone who can answer the toxicity question from Department of Ag or somewhere, we could put them, we have, I want to keep moving through because we have several members on the schedule, but our testifiers, but if there is someone here, we would like to hear it. So, Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Ken Smith. I'm the CEO of the company that is heating this building right now and the State Capitol Complex and two hundred other buildings in downtown St. Paul. And right now we're using mostly tree waste to do that. So thank you for the opportunity to talk to you today about this burgeoning issue of emerald ash borer and how tree waste is managed, particularly in this region. To give you some context for my comments, it's important to remember how we got here. The last time that Minnesota faced widespread death of trees was Dutch elm disease, which we've talked about already a bit. That happened in the 70s and 80s. That devastated the tree canopy in communities across the state and including the metro area. The city of St. Paul lost 50,000 trees in 1 year alone in 1977. This is a picture of the Pig's Eye Wood Yard that's just a few miles from here that we manage today, is where tree waste is processed. And waste wood from diseased elm trees were piled up at this site. It reached heights of 60 and 70 feet high. And there was a report that said, quote, the operators of that site found themselves inundated in acres and acres of elm debris with more coming faster than they could imagine, unquote. Today, most of that was burned, either on purpose or accidentally with fires that were caught from lightning and so forth. You have a picture from 1989 where you can see a lot of the material gone, and the current picture is the site today that we operate. We use about 20 acres of that site to manage tree waste for the region. While there are plans to use the wood for higher purpose, there was so much to deal with, it was open burned. And one of the key reasons the idea came forward to site a cogeneration facility in downtown St. Paul next to District Energy was because of the challenge of dealing with tree waste during Dutch elm disease. St. Paul Cogeneration was developed with private investment in response to the biomass mandate included in the 1994 Prairie Island settlement. And it was purposely designed to deal with raw tree waste, to help solve the problem from diseased trees, storms, tree trimmings, etc., and to produce renewable electricity from that fuel source and renewable heat to heat buildings in the capital city. So each year, we currently use about 260,000 tons of tree waste, and to generate 25 megawatts of electricity, that's sold to Xcel, and approximately 60 megawatts of thermal energy that's used to heat buildings in downtown. We heat about 33 million square feet of building space, about 200 buildings, as I mentioned earlier. Now, to give you a sense, 260,000 tons of tree waste, most of us don't really have a sense of how much that is. If you were to put that in wood chips and put it in semi-trucks, it would fill nearly 12,000 semi-trucks every year. If we put those trucks end to end, they would extend from here to Alexandria. The DNR estimates there'd be approximately 1.7 million tons of tree waste generated from EAB in the metro area. Well, let's use that same analogy. If we were to extend that, if we were to put that in semi-trucks and we were to extend them down I-35 and beyond, it would go from here to New Orleans. The removal of trees and disposal of tree waste is a complex system involving many participants. The tree waste we use as fuel at St. Paul Cogen comes from cities and counties, agencies like MnDOT, the VA, and Air National Guard, private landowners, and businesses. By state law, this is material that cannot be landfilled. And since 2013, we have processed tree waste from 171 communities. Tree waste such as Owatonna, when they had a tornado and storms in 2018, those same storms hit Faribault that year. Where does that material go? It ends up here in St. Paul, and it's turned into energy. We've worked with over 22 counties since 2013, and as mentioned earlier, 171 communities. While we work with many units of government, we serve mostly businesses, and lots of them, hundreds of them, in fact, many of them small businesses. This is a map that shows just the zip codes. This is not the number of businesses. This is just the zip codes of businesses, in excess of 750 businesses that have used St. Paul code generation to dispose of tree waste from public and private lands. Well, now, over the past 3 years, we have witnessed an increase in tree waste in this area, particularly from emerald ash borer. I've included in the information a table from 2019 that shows how we're seeing increases in from counties. This diagram here, this is from 2012 to 2019, and all the trends are up. This is the four counties that we received the most material from: Dakota, Washington, Ramsey, and Hennepin. Since 2012, the amount of tree waste that we're receiving from Hennepin County has approximately doubled. So last year alone, we received 3,000 semi-loads of wood chips equivalent from Hennepin County. In the seven county metro area, and that's not where all of our material comes from, but it is where most of our material comes from, you can see a significant increase, and it has definitely trended up the last 3 years. Over the past 17 years, Environmental Wood Supply, St. Paul Code Generation. So Environmental Wood Supply is a facility that receives the wood material, and St. Paul Code Generation turns it into energy. They become the go-to resource for the management, the orderly management of tree waste in this region. But our ability to continue to provide that service past 2022 is contingent upon extension of a PPA that we have with Xcel. Minnesota has learned over the past decades that generating electricity from woody biomass is more expensive than other traditional sources of generation from natural gas and other renewables such as wind and increasingly solar, particularly the larger scale solar projects that are now coming across Minnesota. To extend the operation of St. Paul cogeneration, the cost of electricity that it generates will need to be comparable to the cost of electricity to other types of facilities that are integral to the management of waste streams in our state. So for example, there's plants in Red Wing and Mankato that turn RDF, refuse derived fuel, into energy, and they receive approximately $20 per ton to lower the cost of the electricity that comes from those facilities so it can compete with other sources of energy. And we're seeking similar fuel payments for St. Paul cogeneration. At $20 a ton, that equates to about $5 million a year since for 250,000 tons of tree waste each year. It is clear that our facility is critical to managing large volumes of tree waste in this region and beyond. And while the system is not perfect, it's the system we have, and it is currently working. And it's effective in managing tree waste in the metro, in particular where it is close to where it's being generated. Proximity is really key. Mentioned earlier, there was a comment made about 75 miles. To give you an idea, it costs about $5 per truck mile to move a truckload of wood. $5 per mile. That's in the metro. It costs more than that. I'm sorry, outside of the metro. It costs more than that in the metro because of delays. We understand that our county partners are interested in new and innovative solutions to manage this and other solid waste streams. But at this time, those solutions aren't in place, and it's estimated to take about 10 years to implement them. Meanwhile, the impact of EAB is growing, and our facility is critical to the management of it. That's why we're seeking funding this session to support an extension of our power purchase agreement to 2030. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I am looking at your map, Minnesota counties served.
Yes.
This is the map, Minnesota counties served by Environmental Wood Supply. When the wood is coming from these counties to you, is it in chip form or is it in log form or both?
Mr. Smith.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, it depends. From some of the counties, it's in both. If the county is in a quarantine area and it needs to pass through a non-quarantined area, then it needs to be chipped up to a certain size per Department of Agricultural requirements before it can be moved through a non-quarantined area. So it's a mixture. We also have, as part of our business, we have mobile equipment that goes out to various sites and grinds it there to bring it into the area.
Representative Guinness.
We know that if you're transporting logs and they have emerald ash borer, then that emerald ash borer can get out. So how do you verify that you are not getting logs that are transported a distance with emerald ash borer in it?
Smith.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, if we're in an area that has been known to be quarantined and there's known to be ash in that, we are assuming that it is contaminated, and so it's being ground up in that area. In some cases, materials brought to us, we're not going out and get it, quite a bit of that actually. In that case, we don't know that they are not transporting it in areas that they're not supposed to be, but when we are dealing with it as a company, we're following the recommendations and the guidelines, actually, from the Department of Agriculture.
Representative Guinness.
Okay. When I'm thinking about this, and I'm thinking about the place far up along, which I think is probably 94.
Yes.
And we do need to get an overlay map here. So do you bring that? It doesn't look like that's wood that you bring down, so somebody else could be bringing down that wood from that area. Am I right?
Mr. Smith.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, that is correct. In some cases, it's areas that we go to, and then we're grinding it up before we're transporting it. In other cases, people are bringing it to us, and it very well could be contaminated and being transported. And you are correct, where that map is showing, your estimation is correct. That is along I-94, where that quarantine area has extended. So up in Clear Lake area, I know that area quite well. But we're also, it's also keep in mind that while it's been talked about that it's in Wisconsin right now, it's also spreading widely across Iowa. So it's on our southern border, and it's also spreading across Canada. So it's on our northern border as well.
Representative Becker-Finn, and then Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I am mindful of time and the additional testifiers, so I'm going to ask you two questions. Hopefully you can hold them both in your mind to answer both of them. First, I'm wondering what cities, counties, tree businesses pay to have you dispose of the tree waste. I know I have constituents who own small businesses taking down trees, and curious what it's costing them to have you guys take care of that. And then if they couldn't bring it to you, where would all these tons of tree waste go?
Mr. Smith.
Mr. Chair, Representative Becker-Finn, the cost, if they are bringing it to us and it's in raw form, doesn't cost them anything to dispose of it. If they are taking it to a wood yard, for example, in St. Louis Park and Ramsey County, other places, they have these wood yards where members of the community can drop it off. I don't believe there's a cost for them to drop that off, and from there that we take it and process it. To your second question about where would it go, I don't know where it would go. I think that would be a good question for the speakers to come from the counties. As I mentioned earlier, this is a lot of material. For those of you that have been down to our wood yard and seen how much material we're dealing with, it's quite staggering. And so if we're not dealing with it, and if you're going to deal with it close in, I don't know where it would go. And if even if some of it went, there's a sheer amount of volume. And the further then you want to move it someplace else to deal with it, that's a cost too, and it's a significant cost.
Representative Green.
Thank you, and I'm going to be very quick. You don't even have to answer my question right now, but I would like to have your information because the amount of questions I have would take us far beyond 2:30.
Okay.
But I am curious, you know, if you're chipping this wood or whether you chip wood or not, it has to be dried before it'll burn effectively. So you must be incurring quite a bit of cost drying these chips. And then if that's the case, and there is time, would it be better to have these things brought in the wintertime, let's say before February, because by then a lot of the water's not in those trees?
Mr. Smith.
Mr. Chair, Representative Green, our plant is actually designed to deal with raw tree waste. We do not have to dry it before it's actually consumed. That's one of the reasons why the plant was designed the way it was, to deal with the volumes as it comes in to us. On average, it's about 30 to 32% moisture content. What we do find is as we have the material in hand and it takes a certain amount of time before it's processed, we lose about 10% moisture content in that wood. So we don't have to dry it. We're not spending money on drying that wood. It's actually processed into chips and then it's burnt. And it's consumed in that way.
Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then the only thing I would say to that is you're using a certain amount of BTUs to suck the water out of that, because whether you're burning it wet or dry, I mean, if it's wet, you have to have a certain amount of BTUs to get rid of the water, because water doesn't burn. And the only advantage you have on ash is I think ash burns pretty good green. So.
Mr. Chair, Representative Green, it does burn pretty good green, but it's quite a mixture of the material comes together. So I would invite you down to our wood yard to see it. It's really a tangled mess of wood that it's got ash trees in it, among other things. And I didn't mention this in my comments. In the month of January alone, nearly 100% of the material that we dealt with was ash.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I believe Commissioner Matas Castillo is not here, and Commissioner Myron, Washington County Partnership to Waste and Energy, is. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Hansen, members of the committee. I am Fran Miron, Washington County Commissioner, member of the Partnership on Waste and Energy, which is a joint powers board of Hennepin, Ramsey, and Washington counties, and I'm here today to speak to county interests related to the Emerald Ash Borer. The ash borer kills ash trees. All ash trees are susceptible to Emerald Ash Borer, and it has infested trees in 21 Minnesota counties, as you heard earlier today, resulting in quarantines being placed on the management of wood resulting from the removal of ash trees. The partnership counties are concerned about Emerald Ash Borer from three perspectives, and you've heard a couple of these already today. First, counties need to manage ash trees that are on county property, such as parks, open space, and along boulevards. There are costs for this, which local government must pay to treat, remove, and replace infested trees, as well as manage the waste wood. Secondly, and there was discussion about this earlier as well, in urban and suburban areas, the tree canopy is an important part of environmental and public health protection. An MPCA health impact analysis of St. Paul's plans to deal with EAB concluded that ash trees alone provide the city with over 2.5 million in services by mitigating air pollution, managing stormwater, and other benefits. Ensuring that the urban and suburban tree canopy is maintained as a vital component of managing diseased trees. Third, and this is the topic that I'm going to address mainly, is how tree waste is managed. Counties are aware of managing waste, being the government entity that the state holds responsible for managing solid waste. Counties understand there is value in wood waste, and that state policies moving forward on EAB need to address that value. The emergence of EAB and the loss of ash trees is creating significant amounts of wood waste, as you just heard, now and well into the future. We know that the volume of wood waste will increase as the Emerald Ash Borer continues to march across the state. Analysis has shown that there are at least 2.95 million ash trees in the 7-county metropolitan area, all of which will succumb to Emerald Ash Borer at some point in time. Those trees result, and I think this number is worth repeating, Mr. Smith just mentioned it, over 1.67 million tons of wood waste that are going to be required to be disposed of. The Minnesota Environmental Quality Board approved a report in October of 2019 called Emerald Ash Borer in Minnesota 2019, which identifies treatment, tree removal, reforestation, and management of the resulting wood as key response strategies. The report stresses the need for continued statewide planning, coordination, and support that indicates the need for interagency partners to report to the EQB on a regular basis. The report conveys urgency in response to EAB, including managing wood waste resulting from tree removal. The report clearly states that a large influx, and I'll quote, a large influx of ash wood will saturate a currently limited wood use market that has little room to expand, end quote. Current users are not able to handle the impending volume of affected ash. So we're talking about instances of composting, instances of wood chips to be used in residential yards and elsewhere. Those markets are really saturated. Unlike the state's experience with Dutch elm disease in the 1960s and 70s and 80s, wood waste cannot be buried in landfills, nor be placed in solid waste, and open burning is certainly not allowed. And as learned with Dutch elm experiences, stockpiling diseased wood can result in spontaneous fires that smolder for months and threaten air quality, public health, and safety. The EQB report notes that there is no planful system in place to manage large quantities of EAB-related wood waste, except for the system created by St. Paul District Energy to collect and process wood for the St. Paul Cogeneration Combined Heat and Power Facility. Landscape and mulch markets are nearly saturated, as I just mentioned, and at a present cannot absorb all the volume of wood waste that will result from EAB and using the wood in making products in an undeveloped market that will take time to advance. Unlike the extensive public sector planning that has occurred for other waste streams in the state, specifically municipal solid waste, construction, demolition waste, hazardous waste, certain problem materials such as e-waste, paint, batteries, and mercury-containing products, there are no comparable policies and plans for wood waste. The EQB report implies the need to develop such a system when it says, quote, ongoing interagency planning is critical to tracking the effectiveness of existing efforts, identifying any gaps, and proposing and implementing policies, regulations, incentives, and any other means to best support those impacted by EAB and the loss of ash trees, end quote. The partnership believes that action is needed now to assure that wood waste is properly managed. That begins with the state leading a coordinated approach to the development of a sound and lasting infrastructure. But this is going to take time. Our experience in the last 40 years in managing solid waste at the local level demonstrates that change doesn't come quickly. And we heard earlier that, you know, we've been aware of the EAB issue for 10 years now. The task of changing the current unstructured wood management industry to one in which policy, economics, and technology align cannot be accomplished in only a few years. Yet the disease keeps advancing and the wood waste keeps coming. During the planning of and transition to a more systematic approach, we strongly urge continued availability of St. Paul cogeneration and preservation of the current economics. For the region served by District Energy, the cost of wood waste management are borne by Xcel Energy and its ratepayers under Xcel's power purchase agreement with St. Paul Cogeneration, which, as you just heard, is set to expire in 2023. In comparison, the cost of management of solid waste is borne by system users. It will take time for the economics of wood waste to be changed, particularly considering the huge impact of EAB. Local governments are not prepared for nor able to bear the total cost of tree removal, tree replacement, and wood waste management. Similar to natural disasters that require extensive cleanup, local governments need state support to respond and recover. Until system economics are changed, there will be a need for outside support of St. Paul cogeneration for processing wood into energy. While there has been some discussion about adding tipping fees as a financial solution, the effect will be to drive wood waste to stockpiling, open burning, because the economics are not properly aligned. Extending St. Paul Cogeneration's power purchase agreement to 2030 and providing state support for wood waste management will give sufficient time to allow for analysis of alternatives and the implementation of recommendations. This is not only reasonable, but it's necessary. Premature unwinding of the current system that is functioning efficiently and effectively will have significant impacts. It is important that changes to this system are done in a planful and purposeful manner. Even wood waste from the state of Minnesota is delivered to the St. Paul Cogen facilities. So, and you know, it was suggested earlier the wood yard. I've toured the wood yard. It is an impressive location with sound equipment that is working quite frankly very functionally. In sum, there's an issue that has urgency, has many stakeholders, affects multiple levels of government, state, county, municipal, and the private sector, and for which there is no structured system in place to address the large and growing volume of material in a short period of time. There appears to be agreement that EAB-related wood waste should be managed responsibly, treating it as a resource with value, and that there is need for a collaborative plan to move in that direction. What is also needed is a determination of state financial support for this direction, and that any solutions for wood waste management be considered as part of a broader waste management system. The Partnership on Waste to Energy strongly supports state action to provide a clear policy pathway properly aligned with economics that embraces new and emerging technology aligned with state waste management and energy goals. While there's a transition to that system, the partnership also strongly supports continued availability of St. Paul cogeneration and preservation of the current economics. I thank you for your time, Mr. Chair, and the committee's time, and certainly would be happy to stand for any questions.
Thank you. I think we're going to move to the next testifier. I want to make sure all the testifiers get through. If there are anybody else who is not on the list that does want to testify, I want to make sure that they're given the opportunity as well. So, Mr. Evans. Okay, we've got one more.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Rick Evans with XL Energy. I want to talk, I've been asked to speak today about XL Energy's contract with St. Paul Cogen and what we see in the future for that contract. As Mr. Smith has already explained, this contract arose out of the 1994 biomass mandate that was passed in the Minnesota legislature. The contract was a long-term contract, which is going to expire in the next few years. The mandate no longer exists, and so XL Energy is not under an obligation to purchase more biomass. In fact, those of you that have been around a couple of years may remember that we've been exiting our biomass contracts over the last few years for a variety of reasons, primarily to save our customers money. But we have been engaged in conversations for the last two or three years with District Energy about continuing the power purchase agreement and under what terms we might be able to do that. Those conversations have now moved into an exciting new possibility that we are that is under active consideration, and that is to convert the St. Paul District Energy operation to an electrification project. In essence, replace the wood-burning stove with an electric range. and we have started doing the engineering on this project. We would propose that the electric heat would be provided by 100% carbon-free energy, turning our city and our Capitol complex into a 100% carbon-free heated facility. We think that's an exciting thing. We also think it provides long-term sustainability for district energy. Eventually, wood burning to create energy, we think, is on its way out, and we would like to replace it with electrification, which we believe strongly is on its way in, particularly as we clean up our portfolio of electric energy that we provide to our customers. This is not something that is, a lead pipe cinch. It's going to take some time of transition. It's going to take a lot more engineering. We're going to have to examine the cost of doing this. We're going to have to examine the business structures, though clearly our intention is to keep district energy in business, providing their customers with heat, into the foreseeable future. And of course, it will require, and this is why we're very happy this committee is starting to look at the EAB problem and other wood waste problems, because it will require an adjustment in how we deal with EAB. We think this proposal is such an exciting and real possibility that it should not be delayed for as much as a decade on account of EAB. There are other ways that we can deal with the EAB. We believe those will emerge as this committee continues its work. District Energy and XL Energy have continued to talk about this proposal. We have, a memorandum of understanding about how we would structure this conversation moving forward and how we would deal with this transition. And we look very much forward to the conclusion of that, and we'll be continuing to keep the legislature apprised as this project develops. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
If you could stick around, Mr. Evans, I think we may have a question, but I want to make sure that Mr. Malooly and Mr. Rigg get the opportunity and our citizen testifier as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And again, if there's anybody else from the audience that does want to testify, please let Mr. Strohmeyer know. Welcome, Mr. Mooley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I've frantically cut out a good deal of presentation in the interest of time. I'll just stick to what's left and be happy to take questions either right after my presentation or after my colleague. My name is Tim Malooly. I'm a volunteer and a servant leader of the Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association, currently serving as its president. MNLA is enjoying its 95th year of service to what we call the green industry. That is, many who design, build, and care for the built outdoor living environment. My companies are focused on water use and reuse and have been active as MNLA members since 1991. MNLA likes to think of itself as a big tent organization of over 1,000 member companies employing 40 to 50,000 workers in various industry segments. While we have member companies that are large enterprises, most of our membership is made of small family-owned businesses. MNLA is a business trade association whose mission is to help members operate successful businesses. Consistently, the most requested member services include continuing education, refinement and promotion of best practices, and proactive participation in government and regulatory affairs, especially as regards to the stewardship of our environment. The topic of emerald ash borer and the threats to Minnesota's ash forest has been known to MNLA for over 10 years. We're hopeful that now is the occasion that we can participate effectively together in actions to address this enormous environmental problem. At the 2020 Northern Green last month, which is our statewide industry exposition. And as part of the Government and Regulatory Affairs Program, we were honored to host visits from Minnesota regulatory agency officials and representatives, including Rick Hansen, Hugh Lee, and Gene Puppy, who all stopped by our Legislative Action Center and walked the show floor. And we encourage all of you to consider coming to Northern Green and get to know our industry. We believe that as a resource, we are considered thoughtful, reasonable, and of value to those charged with leadership of our citizens, including and perhaps especially when considering means and methods to manage our impact on our environment. We're honored to be invited today to discuss with you the important topic of Minnesota's ash forest and the threats before it. We want to be part of the solution or the solutions to the problem of emerald ash borer. Unless there are any questions, I'll turn over the presentation to Mr. Jacob Rigg of the Davie Tree Company.
Welcome, Mr. Rigg.
Thank you very much. Just to quickly, you know, tell you who I am. I've got an urban forestry degree, Bachelor of Science. I'm a certified arborist, board certified master arborist, and I've been a municipal forester for 10 years, and I've also been a commercial arborist for 6. So basically, in my role, I run a small business in South St. Paul. So what I've had a lot of experience with emerald ash borer, first being 2004 with the Department of Agriculture. I got to tag along. We went to Ohio just to look and see what emerald ash borer was happening. You know, nothing's been found in Minnesota at that time. We pulled the car over to a forest area, walked in, ash forest looked pretty nice. We cut down one tree, and that thing was loaded with emerald ash borer. There were thousands and thousands of emerald ash borer in that tree. So it was an eye-opening experience. Not many people knew about the insect other than it was dying ash trees everywhere, and people were quite concerned. So you fast forward to today, you can see this photograph represents where it is today. Spread like wildfire. You know, they say it can move a couple miles a year naturally. It takes one person with a load of firewood from their home infested with emerald ash borer to go to North Dakota, to go to Iowa. It takes hours to move it, hundreds and hundreds of miles. So it is one that if you know about trees and you like them and you understand them, you go into the places like Wisconsin along Highway 29. I was there 2 weeks ago, and it is everywhere. It is. You look for what's called blonding on the trunk. It looks like the woodpeckers are kind of peeling it off. If you go along that route, it is devastation. Every single ash tree is dead, and it's not, you know, one or two. It's all the trees. So it's pretty amazing event. Some of the concerns we have, the picture shown here, this occurred right outside of Rochester last December, I believe. The brush dump site that was run in partnership with the city and a private company, they decided, you know, it's too expensive to do anything with this wood other than burn it. So the citizens of the area and the county experienced 5 to 7 days of smoke, an enormous amount of smoke. So, you know, the health conscious and the people that have asthma and things of that nature had to stay inside. So it is a big deal when something like that happens. And it's a very common thing for tree services, if they live outside in rural areas, to take their waste and burn it. It's been happening since the 70s. But, you know, that as a forester, a trained forester, is a sad thing. We just happen to be part of the Davie Tree Expert Company. We're one of the largest mulch distributors in the Midwest out of our South St. Paul office. We process hundreds of thousands of yards every year to a national mulch company, and we just have a tiny little piece of that. We do have free dumping at our site, and we go through hundreds of thousands of trees a year. That's just, again, a tip of the iceberg. Not all companies dump there. We take a lot to district energy as well. So it is something that I'm very keen. I see it coming every single day, how many big monster trees there are. Picture was taken out of Ohio. This is what our areas that planted a monoculture, you know, a single species on streets of ash, they're gone. There's places in St. Paul, Minneapolis that look like, you know, you can take a picture, it looks like 1950s because of the house style and things, but no mature trees. the impact is pretty devastating to people that live in those areas, property values, et cetera. One tree that we took down this last year, one ash tree in a yard, was $15,000. That's one single, it's a unique tree. It was huge. It needed a crane to come out of the backyard. But $700, what was described earlier, is a pretty average price. But if you're on a fixed income, I'd garner that most people in this room know someone with an ash tree or have one yourself. The expense is amazingly difficult to pay. So it's something, if you think about how many trees are in our area, and guess what? If you don't take those trees down, you let them die, the bark falls off. It's been shown that through some of our research at our company that we have put throw lines, which is a line that goes up into a tree where a climber can access that tree and pull down on an infested tree. So 6-inch diameter branches have been coming off trees, which puts people at risk, the people that remove those trees. So we have a policy that you can't enter an emerald ash borer infested tree unless you tie into something larger than 6 inches in diameter. So if you're the person that can't afford it, you leave it next to your house or over your neighbor's house, it's gonna break off. You least expect it pretty much, or a wind event. So personal damage, lawsuits, all those things are possible. Especially in the poor areas, it's pretty traumatic. I personally took this picture. This is ground zero, the first one ever found in Minnesota. It had been there many, many years. You can tell because of the darkness of the galleries and the lightness of some. When you say emerald ash borer isn't here yet in different areas of Minnesota, it's a little bit of a misnomer because usually it takes 4, 5, 6, 7 years for that population to show up. So it's in a lot of trees, it's a lot of states that don't know it yet, but it's, it takes many, many years to find the first signs of emerald ash borer. This example from Ohio again, you can see that that stark contrast, and it's happened all over the country. You can see on the left, beautiful forest. All those things that we talk about as benefits, stormwater sequestration, home values, there's hundreds and hundreds of positive things about ash trees. But when you're forced as a community to rip down every single tree, pay that huge dollar amount and have nothing to show for it, it's pretty tough. But unfortunately, we can plant trees, new ones. It's just, we have to wait around for those to grow up again, like was said earlier, many generations. So I think that personally, emerald ash borer has been an environmental disaster, and it's something that we have no control over it. Humans have tried to eradicate it. They put millions of dollars into it in Michigan when it was first located, and all efforts failed. I have a vice president of the company that came, and he lives in Michigan, came to Minnesota and said, wow, this place looks like 2004. All over again, because they had an ash community and they're all gone. He was amazed to see ash trees. So at some point in our lives, we're all gonna feel that, if you know what you're looking at, that the ash tree will be virtually extinct from Minnesota.
Thank you. Representative Eklund.
Mr. Rigg, thank you. A quick question. When you remove these ash trees, are you chipping them, grinding them on the spot, or what do you do with the as far as for the transport?
Mr. Rigg.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, I'm not really good with the process here, but Representative, okay. We do everything you can think of, so other than burning. So we grind on site. We have mobile grinders that go to different communities. We truck in different logs and things like that to actually make the shredded material that gets turned into high-quality mulch products. So we do a lot of different things. We've gone as far as Laverne, Minnesota. We've gone all over the state to help people out when we have storms and things like that, process their materials. But we recycle everything, tree-wise.
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, and thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess that is what gets to my original problem is we can't transport firewood. EAB will move as much as two miles a year naturally. And I'm very concerned about what the protocol is for moving these diseased trees around the state. I think that we're contributing to the problem rather than fixing the problem. Thank you.
Thank you. And we have one other citizen testifier.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Mark Hughes, and you know, I know about trees because I have a couple in the family that are foresters, and I like the windmill idea and steam heat in St. Paul. Being a chairman of the disability committee there for 23 years, I learned a lot about that, believe it or not. But I do have a comment today on EAB wood chips. We've been using this program a while, right? When this program was planned at the implementation or start thereof, we should have known that someday the landfill is going to fill up and we got to go someplace with these wood chips. Here we are today in 2020, the start of the new decade, worrying about what some wood chips are, where some wood chips are going to go and what it's going to cost. And we can come to the state of Minnesota. That's great. We can do that. All I'm saying is for feasibility, economics, when you start a plan, you know that there's going to be landfill growth, there's going to be landfill that's going to fill up, and you have to have plan B. And I just wonder if somebody has any answers on this, because it seems to me that we've got to the fourth quarter, the ninth inning, however you want it, and all of a sudden we've got to start worrying. I don't think we would have had to do any of this had we planned a little more carefully. Thank you.
Thank you. Just a couple of comments. I mean, I think all of us have heard today that there's a variety of issues here that may be competing or complementing. Part of the reason that we are in the fourth quarter or the ninth inning is we waited 10 years. And, you know, just personally, I think part of the issue on the treating versus the taking is that discussion probably needed to occur 10 years ago when we were at the beachhead or the breakout of this problem starting. We invested as a state $2 million in 2009, and then we stopped until the $1 million that came here. And now we are dealing with a waste problem that is huge, that's in front of us. And going to continue to grow. We are on that death curve of the exponential growth, and it's going to be affecting all of our communities. So we are playing catch up because we didn't act, and that's a collective problem that we all bear responsibility for. And that's, I'm pleased that we were able to get some money last year, and we see the demand that is there, and hopefully we can find some other dollars. But this is a tough issue on what do we do with the waste. So district energy, so there's the issue of electric generation or the power generation, and then there's the issue of waste disposal. And we have looked at those two as side benefits to each other. And now we may have to separate those for dealing with how do we deal with wood waste and how do we deal with decarbonization. This is not a one-day discussion, and I'm hopeful that because this affects all of us and all of our constituents, that we can put our collective heads together here and try to figure out something, at least get a start on this and try to catch up, because it is going to be overwhelming all of us. And we can look back, but we're going to have to look forward, and it's right here, right now, to have to deal with. And I invite all the people that are here in the room and people that are at home and the people around the table that we're going to have to try to figure out what are we going to do, because we can't duck it or ignore it anymore. It is here, and we're going to have to resolve it. So thank you. We are adjourned.